Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, the co-chairman of the IBM Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the endowment by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation this morning is with Samuel Bodman. Sam is the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
And joining us in our conversation is Tom Romeo. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Well, Sam, perhaps you could give us some context. Let's begin by finding out more about the Department of Commerce. We know it's made up of a number of bureaus that have a wide range and function, so perhaps you could describe overall mission.
As you've already suggested, the department's mission is broad, and the responsibility set that we have is very diverse. Secretary Evans, my boss, and I really see our role as stewards for the free enterprise system. That's how we think of it. We both come from the private sector, and that's how we think of this job. Our mission is quite simple: to be an advocate for and a facilitator of business in the United States. And between the United States and the world. Our priorities include promoting free and fair trade practices, encouraging economic development in distressed communities, protecting intellectual property at the patent office, which is part of our responsibility, and improving the quality of life and the productivity of our economy through research. The research activity of the department is a very important part of it. We have a very active website, www.commerce.gov, that is consistently one of the top three web presences across all of the government.
Could you give us a sense of perspective in terms of the number of employees and the size of the budget of the Department of Commerce?
We have a budget of about $5 billion, which in the non-Washington world is a great deal of money. Among the departments here in Washington, it's on the smaller size. But we have 40,000 employees, close to 40,000 employees, that many of whom are here in Washington, but a significant number are scattered throughout the United States as well as around the world.
Is there a history of how the department came to have so many varied functions?
Well, I guess the best way to answer that is to go back and look a bit at the history of the department. We began as the Department of Commerce and Labor. Both departments were together. It was formed in 1903, almost 100 years ago. In fact, the month of February will be our 100th anniversary, and we're going to be celebrating that during the next few weeks. Labor and Commerce became separate departments 10 years later in 1913. Commerce and Labor were the seventh department formed as the government was taking shape at that point in time. The Patent and Trademark Office was formed outside but was transferred to the Department of Commerce from Interior in 1925. The Economic Development Administration, part of our work with outreach to communities in the U.S., was created in 1965. NOAA, which is now almost half of our budget, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, was formed in 1970, and that joined the department. NTIA, which is our activity for overseeing the telecommunications spectrum within the government, we represent the government in discussing these matters with the FCC, was created and developed also during the 70s. International Trade Administration, formed in 1980. So all of these components, which are thought of as activities of the government which aid the development of free enterprise, of business, and of the flow of commerce, all were added in over this century.
Sam, can you tell us a little bit about your roles and responsibilities as the Deputy Secretary?
Tom, I'm really thought of, I think it's fair to say, as the Chief Operating Officer. In fact, early in our tenure, all the deputies were summoned over to the White House. The president met with us in the Roosevelt Room, and he instructed us that you all are the chief operating officers of your department, and your job is to keep the day-to-day activities of the department running effectively and smoothly, thereby liberating the secretaries of the various departments, including Commerce, to spend time on in speaking out, in working with the president on his priorities. The chief operating officer, at least as I think about it, kind of defines his job as the complement of the things that the secretary wants to get done. Our secretary, for example, has concluded that he wants to spend a large part of his time on the on international trade and on the economy. So he works extensively with Secretary Aldanis in the International Trade Administration. I tend to spend most of my time with the many other bureaus within the department, whether it's NOAA or the Patent Office, EDA, and so forth. So it's a matter of splitting up the load. I also spend time working with my counterparts, the deputies of the other departments, in implementing the president's management agenda.
Could you tell us a little bit about your career before coming into this position and maybe think a little bit about what in your past best prepared you to take on the job?
I'm a chemical engineer, Tom, by training. I was educated first at Cornell, and then I got a doctorate at MIT, and I spent the first 7 years of my professional life as a teacher. I was professor of engineering at MIT. I started doing some consulting work in the venture capital industry in those days, which was a brand new field. That led me to leave teaching in about 1970, and I resigned my professorship and took a job with what was then a very small company in Boston with 50 employees. That company became Fidelity Investments, which now has tens of thousands of employees and is spread around the world. I was there 17 years. Over time, I became president and chief operating officer of that company and oversaw the management of mutual funds, the brokerage business, pension fund management, and the like. In 1986, I left Fidelity and became chairman and chief executive officer of Cabot Corporation, a Boston-based Fortune 500 company engaged in those days, in oil and gas, in chemical manufacturing, and specialty materials. We spun off the oil and gas business, so Cabot continues as a chemical and specialty material business. As to what prepared me best for this job, I would say first being a chief operating officer at Fidelity, which I was for almost a decade, helped me take on this assignment here because I understood the need to conform my responsibilities, to conform my activities, perhaps I should say, to those of the secretaries or, in that case, of the chairman at Fidelity, so as to best provide for a unified and effective partnership. At Cabot, I spent much of my time there as the chief executive, looking at and visiting other nations and making investments in countries around the world where Cabot had never operated. Cabot operates today some 45, 46 chemical plants in 25 countries. Five or six of those countries were new, were done on my watch, so I spent a lot of time negotiating terms of new plants and new facilities abroad. And that's helped me, frankly, in my role in the department in dealing with the ministers of trade and commerce from foreign countries who visit. And sometimes the secretary, if he's in town, sees those. In many instances, I see them because I tend to spend more of my time here in Washington while the secretary is on the road. So that one at Fidelity, learning the ins and outs of being a chief operating officer, and two, understanding how to deal with foreign governments was something I learned a lot about at Cabot.
You're working in the public sector now, but it's clear that you have a great deal of private sector experience. How would you contrast the two sectors in terms of culture and management style?
Well, there is much greater diversity in the private sector as to culture and management style. Some companies are quite formal and structured. Others, much more informal. Cabot was a company that I worked hard on changing during the time I was there. The company I inherited was a very formal, highly structured one. I felt that we could make better decisions and run the company more effectively by decentralizing business activities, causing decisions to be made locally, and to make it a more informal organization that people operated, for example, on a first-name basis. The government is a much more formal place to do business and to work. I account for that for two reasons. One, it's a very large organization. There are millions of people working in the government. And therefore, it's important, I believe, to have a certain degree of structure to maintain an effective organization. And a big fraction of government employees are military folks. And obviously, the military has its own very structured the way of doing business, the way of functioning. The president is the is in effect the chief executive officer of not just the civilian government but of the military, and so I think some of the formality of the military spills over in the way we do business. People are addressed by title and by position much more in the government than my experience in working in the private sector.
That's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue our conversation with Sam Bodman of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Do you know what the American Jobs, American Value Initiative is? You'll find out when we ask Sam when the Business of Government Hour returns.